Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of the Short Term Show, the first one of 2026. Looking forward to a really great year this year. I'm your host, Avery Carl. Before we get to our guest today, I have a few announcements to make. We are still hiring for our managing broker slash director of operations role, as well as agents in a few markets, Outer Banks, Park City, Angel Fire, New Mexico, and the Smokies, as always. So email us at careers@theshorttermshop.com if you're interested in any of those things. The managing broker position, you do have to have experience having managed a team of real estate agents before. And of course, know a little something about short-term rentals, but that's full-time remote. Anyway, a big announcement today on the first show of 2026. We have finally, here at the Short-Term Shop, launched a Poconos office. So now, in addition to all the other vacation markets that we offer for you guys to work with our agents in, we now offer the Poconos. And what better way to introduce our Poconos office into the world but to interview a Poconos investor? Almost said Poconos agent, because we just hired a Poconos agent. So what better way to intro than to interview a Poconos investor? Also, guys, we have launched in the past 2 weeks our 5-episode Short-Term Shop Poconos only podcast. So 5 episodes on all things Poconos with myself, our Poconos agent Tristan, and a few other really interesting folks. So be sure to check that out. We'll put the link in the show notes. And now we'll get to today's episode interviewing a Poconos investor. Kira D'Annunzio, how's it going today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I can complain a little bit, a little tired. Had a kid with a stomach virus all night, but we got him through and he's good and just chilling and eating soup and watching Price is Right today. What about you?
That's the best.
Awesome. So Kira, tell us a little bit about how you got into real estate investing, who you are, all that background stuff before we get into a conversation.
I have a really interesting story. My elevator pitch, I like to say I'm the quintessential millennial that has just kind of been railroaded by things that people couldn't have seen coming. Mm-hmm. So I graduated college in 2008. I'm kind of a Jane of all trades. Graduated college in 2008, just at the peak of the recession.
Same.
So the best time to graduate college with a business degree. I have a marketing degree from Penn State University. Thought I did everything right. I great grades. I went to a good school, took co-ops and all that kind of stuff. Graduated 2008 to a job market that had no jobs. Finally got a job, was excited, about 6 months was laid off from my first job for budgetary reasons. Mm. 6 more months to finally get another job, super low pay, all of those things. Learned really quickly that marketing is very replaceable because you are not specialized. So somebody who had a finance degree could do my job, but I couldn't do the finance job. So I learned that lesson at like 23, 22, real early. Then kind of quarter life crisis at 25, not being able to get a career started because of the economy. I decided to go back to school to get my doctorate in physical therapy. So I'm actually Dr. Kira D'Annunzio.
Love it.
Went back to school, got my doctorate, started working 2017, started finally making good money. But because I was struggling so early in my career, I taught myself personal finance. Mm-hmm. Because, when you weren't getting paid in a W-2, you had to learn how do you make money make you money, mm-hmm. rather than working 40 hours a week, 3 jobs, etc. And one thread that continued to kind of go into my brain was real estate's the vehicle towards wealth. that repeatedly learning about personal finance, it was real estate is the way to go. So I always knew I wanted to own at least one investment property. Finally making good money as a physical therapist, I bought my own primary residence in 2019. I happened to get in right at the perfect time. You know, thinking I have this super stable job in healthcare, and then COVID happened. So my super stable job in healthcare suddenly now is not stable at all because I worked with geriatric populations.
Oh, goodness.
I was a home health physical therapist. So nobody wanted anybody coming into their homes during COVID. So I got let go again. So I've been laid off four times. I'm not even 40. I've been let go four times in my career to this point. I'm turning 40 next month. So what ended up happening was I realized I'm done relying on other people for job security. I cannot trust a W-2 job. I need to make my own thing to be able to have a backup in case my job goes away, which was my entire career. So obviously in 2020, COVID happened. I got let go from my job. That was right before the market went crazy. It was kind of when people were still in that, like, nobody knows what's going to happen in the real estate market. Is it going to tank? You know, is it going to go up? So landlords were selling like crazy, especially the old retired landlords that kind of were like, I don't want to deal with this. Just get rid of it. So I thought, now's my time. At the time, I was getting those stimulus checks. So between unemployment and the stimulus checks, I was basically making a full-time salary to not work. So it was like, now's the time to take a look. And I purchased my first duplex. It was a tenant-occupied duplex in my neighborhood in Philadelphia. And I thought, this is great because there's tenants in there. I have however much time to learn how to be a landlord with these existing tenants who were up to date on their payments, everything. Equity build. I knew it was a high value property. It's one bedroom apartments that each of them is very rare in the city to have one bedroom apartments. Way under market value. They were like renting, I think, each for $800. And he could have been getting as is $1,200 for each of them, which is what I ended up getting once we turned it over and then renovated and then ended up getting more. Luckily for me, the equity in my house, as well as my investment property, skyrocketed in 2020, 2021. So I tapped the equity from both of those and actually bought the Poconos property with the HELOC money from the equity from the other two. So kind of did a burr strategy there.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Poconos property was a wholesale property. So it was off market. And again, it was a major equity build. The property had been vacant for about 5 years. And then the backstory of the Poconos was the guy who owned it, he inherited it from his mom. His mom used to live there. He lived in New York. He unsuccessfully rented it to horrible tenants that like destroyed the property 10 years ago. So he kind of was like, this isn't for me. I'm done. I don't want this property. It's too much of a burden. So I ended up getting it for a pretty good deal. And then same thing, renovated, refinanced, took the cash back out. And now it's a very successful 5-star Airbnb.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com.
Amazing. So yeah. I love this whole story and have a lot of questions, but I'm going to start at the very beginning. And this has nothing to do with real estate, but as a fellow millennial who graduated in 2009 with a major, I want to know what your parents' feedback was on you not being able to get a job, because mine to this day insist that I did not want a job and that I did not try hard enough. And to quote my dad, you need to be out there pounding the pavement every day, taking your resumes in places.
Yeah.
Guys, we're in the middle of the biggest crash that we've ever had.
Yeah. And like when you do get a job, it's like $22,000 a year. Yeah. Like you, like I always tell people, I'm like, you were just lucky to have a job. So you took whatever bones or scraps they threw to you. Yeah, my parents were a little bit more supportive about it because they knew that like I was trying, and like that in school I did everything right. I was straight A's. I was, you know, all these things. I was in every club. I had internships. Like everything was right. So they were very supportive. They let me stay at home for a year to try to get figured out like what I'm doing here. But yeah, they didn't understand it because my dad's been at the same company for his entire career. Like he's been at the same company for 40 years. So to them, they're not really supportive of how much I bounced around. But again, millennials, we don't stay at one place. In order for us to have upward growth, we have to move horizontally and up or diagonally. But for us to make money, we don't get pensions. We don't get guaranteed yearly raises. And that was a huge impetus for me to get into real estate, because the beauty of what I now own 5 properties. Only one is a short-term rental. The rest are midterm rentals.
Okay.
That's kind of my sweet spot that I found. I'm the type of person, I know you really focus on one strategy and get good at it before diversifying. I actually tried diversifying first, then finding out like, okay, this is the one I like, and then getting and focusing on it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool though. I mean, and I love to hear that because there are so many ways you can be successful in real estate investing. And I never trust when people are like, no, this is the right and only way. The way I'm telling you, the thing that paid me $45,000 to tell you is it. And it's not.
Yeah.
So many ways.
There's so many nuances in each of the different ways you can do it, right? And the beauty in real estate, and what I love about being self-employed. This is now my full-time job. I own and manage the 5 rentals myself. I get to be a stay-at-home mom, you know, and it's not super time consuming. But the biggest thing that I learned is you have control to pivot where necessary, right? So when you're working for somebody else, you may see, I have a huge offer. When I saw you're hiring for an operations, I was like, oh, but I'm not an agent and I don't have any experience managing or brokering. I'm just an investor, but I'm an operations person. And in every job I ever had, you saw these operational inefficiencies and you saw how these companies could be improving. But you're this person low on the totem pole. And I've been told many times, kind of just shut your mouth and know your role and just do your job you were hired for.
Yes.
And it's so frustrating because you see how much better a company could be and you have no control. In real estate, when you see that a strategy isn't working, especially having a background like I do, that I have a long-term, midterm, and short-term experience, if a strategy is not working, I can quickly and easily pivot, if the property is appropriate for it, pivot to a different strategy. And in fact, the Poconos, we actually pivoted to a hybrid midterm, short-term strategy after operating for 3 years and seeing, you know, it's very seasonal in the Poconos. A lot of people think, being from Philadelphia, you associate the Poconos with skiing, right? Because in Philadelphia, we go to the shore in New Jersey for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So we think of Poconos as winter. We go skiing in the Poconos. But the Poconos high season is actually summertime.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people from New York come down to the Poconos for their summer vacation. So it's backwards than what the Philadelphia market thinks of. So we actually sort of am starting to pivot into doing midterm strategy during the winters and then short-term strategy during the summers.
Okay. So tell me about your Poconos deal. So what made you decide, all right, I've got two long-term rentals. I want to buy a short-term in the Poconos. Let's start there.
I didn't want to. That's how. So my biggest thing, being laid off so many times in my life, is when you see opportunity, saying yes to opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to be a little impulsive to be successful in life. I had no desire to have a short term. I knew nothing about short term. It's not local to me. I'm in Philadelphia, so it's an hour and a half away. I manage remotely. But it was a killer deal. Like when you can analyze a deal quickly and see potential in the property, and that's kind of what I want to talk about while I'm on, is understanding who your specific avatar is and having the background that I do in marketing, branding towards that target avatar. So in this case, it was an off-market opportunity, so not much competition to buy it, even though the person who posted it had like 70 responses.
Oh, wow.
It's lake adjacent in the Poconos. So we're a block from a private neighborhood lake. It's tiny, very small. There's no HOA in the neighborhood, which if you know anything about the Poconos is huge.
Yeah, that's hard to find.
Huge. So off market, it is a block from a private lake and there's a little beach area. So it's like an actual usable, like go hang out with your family kind of lake. It's a mile from Kalahari Water Park, which is like one of the biggest water parks on the East Coast. Around it are tons of, there's like a Walmart a block away, which in the Poconos, you can be very far away from shopping. Same as I'm sure Tennessee is probably similar. What was the other thing that was a huge draw? And then an equity build. So it was too good of a, oh, and long-term rents would have supported it as well. So if it failed as a short-term rental, the long-term rents would have supported the mortgage if we had to pivot as needed. And that's what I said, like being able to, I always evaluate a property that if it fails in one, it can always succeed in another if need be. So it needs to be able to be successful in two rental strategies. So it kind of was like, this opportunity is too good to pass up. I literally messaged the guy, drove up the next day to look at the house. It needed more work than I had anticipated by running the numbers, looking at the pictures, but the cash cow-ness of it was there. So I put in a much higher offer than I should have, which, you know, is dangerous territory, but again, the analysis was there, right? So I did do my due diligence. It wasn't just a, you know, star eye buy a property. And then the equity build was huge. So I figured, I even said to my husband, I was like, well, we're going to own an Airbnb. He was like, what? Like, he was like, what are you talking about? But it's all about learning. You know, like I learned on the back end, I listened to your podcast, like religiously.
Thank you.
And just learned and learned, but I'm an operations person. So like I can figure anything out and make it successful.
Okay. So I love this story. And what year did you buy that? Was that like in the height of COVID?
That was 2021.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like still kind of like COVID was like starting to sort of die off a little bit. So it was nice because it gave me time to renovate without like the pressure of needing to go live, needing to go active. And at the time it was only my second property besides my primary residence. So I had the ability to kind of like learn about renovating from a distance, not being local, making the connections up there.
All right. So a couple questions here. So how much did you pay for this property and about how big is it and what is it gross annually, would you say?
So it's, I paid $140 for it at the time. which in the Poconos, like I said, that was too much. It probably at the time for the work and eat, it should have been about 100,000. So I paid about 40 over. But I had assessed that the ARV would have been around 225 after renovation. So of course, you know, with any property, as you know, your renovation costs always end up being more than you anticipate. I ended up maybe putting a little too much into it than I should have, as far as improvements that weren't 100% necessary, right? So like it was and you'll see once I start talking about kind of the idea and the branding behind it. I was in love with the property and I wanted to make it this really special place. So I put probably a little bit more detail than I needed to into it that, you know, didn't need to happen, but cost me money that, like, in retrospect, as now looking back as an investor, you know, you kind of learn only put things in that are going to increase your ROI, right? So like some things are unnecessary. So I put about 70,000 into the renovation. So I bought for 140 and about 70,000. So that put me around 210. So there would have been a little bit of extra equity build at a cash out refi. Ended up getting screwed during our appraisal.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Again, learning, you know, a brand new investor, figuring this out as I go. It wasn't fully done when we got the appraisal. So I think that kind of messed us up a little bit. Like the landscaping wasn't fully done. So it just still kind of looked like, I don't want to say it looked like a messy property, but it still kind of looked like on the lower end. So it only appraised at 184. There was also all sorts of issues with the appraisal. Like he was using comps that didn't sell. Like he was using comps that were still on the market. He was using comps that were like 10 miles away. Part of the issue with the Poconos, it's a rural property. It's considered rural. So there's limited comparables, right? The property is only 1,000 square feet. It's only a 2-bedroom, 1-bath. The reason I bought that property was because I didn't want to deal with the headaches of party property.
Oh, yeah. You said 1-bedroom, right?
2-bedroom. Oh, 2-bedroom. Yeah.
2-bedroom.
2-bedroom, 1-bath. Small. But being from Philadelphia, the Poconos is a weekend destination, right? We are a very short notice, hey, let's go to the Poconos, right? That's like what we do for fun on the weekends in New York and Philadelphia and New Jersey. You say, hey, let's go to the Poconos for the weekend, right? So that's kind of what I want to get into with what I wanted to talk about, is that understanding who your avatar is. And buying properties specifically to target those, who's going to give you the most business, basically. So the way that we literally built the house, because it was a full renovation mostly, was keeping that avatar in mind of this is who our target demographic is going to be. How do we make this property fit that target demographic that's coming? And that keeps us fed year round.
Okay. So what is, out of curiosity, the demographic of people who are coming? I guess you, like small families who want to get out of Philadelphia for the weekend?
Yep. Yeah. So 2-bedroom house, right? It's a small family. It's a family of 5, right? Family of 5, family of 6. We sleep 6. We're a mile from an indoor water park. So when skiing is inconsistent, right? Philadelphia mind, you think Poconos skiing, but we haven't had snow in like 5 years in the Poconos. We haven't had significant snow in years.
Did not know that.
Yeah. The other problem is you're competing with people who are right next to a ski resort. Now, where I'm located, I'm 15 minutes from a ski mountain. So that's great. But the water park is what people are going to come to during the winter. Indoor water park.
Indoor water park.
Yeah. So in the winter, we have an indoor water park, also during summer. And then we're a lake. We have a private, small, little lake that families are going to want to come and hang out on the beach, right? So immediately we're weekenders, we're families with kids specifically. In addition, majority of Airbnb hosts strongly dislike kids. Right? So if you can target the kids, everybody else is telling you, we don't want kids, we don't want kids. And we're saying, bring them on. Our building is made for kids and that family experience. Even though we're a small property, we are booked consistently. Furthermore, I'll go on for hours and hours and hours about this.
No, it's great.
We don't tout that we're a luxury stay, right? So we're not, you know, a dump either, but we market it as like, come play and explore, right? Like, bring your kids. You're built for your kids. And you're not going to be spending luxury money in something where you don't want your kids touching anything. We want your kids to be able to go and play and you be able to enjoy your vacation without worrying about your kids. So that spawned the idea of, backtrack a little bit. When I was a kid, we always rented at the Jersey Shore. Every year we didn't own a property, but we rented a new house every single year for like a week at the shore in the summer. Very Philadelphian. there was a house that had a pool table in it. Now back then they didn't have Airbnbs. So it wasn't, you know, it was in the '90s, a pool table in a rental was like the coolest thing you could have. Right.
I remember that age.
We would
as kids in a rental with a pool table, like, do really uncool things like throwing the pool balls and like sword fighting with the sticks.
Yeah, right. Right. Like, it's a no business in a rental with a pool table. And like, you know, we were kind of lower budget and all that stuff. So to have a pool table, and it was like crammed in this tiny little house that had no reason to have a pool table. And to this day, we talk about the pool table house, right? So it was something that was unique that cost them like not much money that I remember for the rest of my life was that pool table house and how I felt as a kid, like that being so cool. So that is what spawned, let's make this an experience that people remember when they're an adult and they say, do you remember that house that we went to in the Poconos, right? You don't do that with luxury houses. You don't go, remember that house that had nice furniture, you know, like that. So going into developing and renovating the property was like, how do I make this an experience rather than just a nice house? Like all the other properties are just nice houses. So the idea came up of being, what if we called it Bigfoot's Nook? The idea it's Bigfoot's house and he's your Airbnb host. He's Airbnb-ing it while he's wandering the woods. So now there's a story to the house, right? So now Bigfoot is your host. And the idea was, it's not kitschy Bigfoot, right? So it's not like we have Bigfoot curtains and Bigfoot bedspread and Bigfoot pillows and Bigfoot everywhere. It still is attractive because our two demographics that we would, being a small house, couples, right? Kidless couples and families, two bedroom house, right?
Right.
We don't want to alienate the couples. If we make it too kiddy, you alienate this demographic.
Right.
You make it too romantic couple-y, you alienate this demographic. So the idea was let's design it. And I keep saying let's. I'm designing it. I always think my husband had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, Luke, my husband says when I'm telling him to do something, I always say, hey, let's try this thing when I really mean like you do this.
It like softens it a little bit. If we're doing it, it's better.
Yeah, it's us.
So the idea was we're not going to go kitschy. It's not going to be Bigfoot themed. It's Bigfoot's house. And if you think about it from that sense, he's not going to have Bigfoot stuff all over his own house, right? That's weird. So we found a balance between a really attractive looking kind of what would Bigfoot relax in? So greens, cream colors, natural wood, like really nature-y colors. And then there's, you know, cute little Bigfoot things around. And what we did was we developed Bigfoot games for the kids. So like there's a whiteboard and it's a how to draw a Bigfoot and they can pretend to draw a Bigfoot. It cost me no money. I bought a $5 whiteboard, right? There's a like a Where's Waldo, but it's Where's Bigfoot. So they have to find Bigfoot on a puzzle thing that I printed out for free. little stuff like that. There's little Bigfoot puzzle, like a 3D Bigfoot puzzle. So the kids lose their minds at this house. One thing that is huge is, first of all, when you're searching for our house, with the color scheme, everybody else are these like boring gray, right? Like luxury, fancy. You scroll down and it's like white, 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 greens, browns. Like we're so warm coloring compared to everybody else's cool coloring. So we stand out on the front page.
Yeah, that's so important, really, is just standing out on the front page. Everything is about getting clicks and then getting bookings, and you can't get bookings without getting clicks.
Exactly. So, we ended up getting a, from, I want to say it was like Alabama. It was actually cheaper to import it than it was to get somebody to do it. We have a tree carving of a Bigfoot. It's like a 5-foot Bigfoot. And it's kind of cartoony, you know, because everything's kind of cartoony. That's our hero photo. So we don't even market our property as the hero photo. We have a big Bigfoot that says, welcome to Bigfoot's Nook. And we get so many more clicks.
Because, just by having a Bigfoot.
Yeah. You're scrolling down. Even if you have no interest in the property, you're going to look at it.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's all about that initial click. Once you get that initial click, then you've got the people.
Yeah.
We have live one-on-one coaching sessions available with our wonderful top-notch coaches at Short Term Shop Plus, and we would love to help you in your vacation rental journey. The mission remains constant, to provide amazing homes so that our guests can create awesome memories with their families. If you need help to set up your systems and processes, how to communicate with guests, how to improve your systems, how to find and hire housekeepers, and all of the above, you are looking for Short Term Shop Plus. You can find us at stsplus.com. And the best part is, the price is right. Reasonably priced. And if you are a Short Term Shop client, please use the code CLIENT at checkout for an even better deal on stsplus.com. From the hardest working gal in real estate, Avery Carl, we now have a new book, Smarter Short-Term Rentals, available wherever books are sold. Build a dynamic real estate business and outhost the competition. That's Smarter Short-Term Rentals, the book.
So how much does this make per year, gross numbers?
Yeah. So that's where it gets a little tricky. So the past, we've been live 3 years. We've made about 30K gross. Okay. The biggest issues we're finding, first of all, we're only on Airbnb. We don't market anywhere else. And we're at about 85 to 90% occupancy just with Airbnb.
Okay.
So part of that's on me that I haven't expanded to Vrbo and, you know, all these other platforms that I probably should be on. biggest issue with a small house that I've learned over this time is you're almost mitigating the damage party risk with income potential, right? So income potential and lower expenses. Problem is, when you have a two-bedroom house, you're limited to one family, maybe two families, right? So you hit a price ceiling. One family can't really pay more than $500, $600, $700 a weekend. If you have a big house, now you have four families each paying $500, $600 a weekend, right?
Right.
So economies of scale, but at the same time, I've gone up and done cleanings myself. These families leave it meticulous. You come in and it's like the turns, it's like nobody even lived there. We've had zero damage in 3 years.
That's nice. That's kind of like, for the most part, we in 10 years across 10 properties now, most people leave our properties really, really nice. Yes. And every now and then you'll get somebody who leaves stuff like never really any damage, knock on wood, but.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to find wood as we speak.
Yeah, they might leave a little trash out or something, but you know, nothing major. And that I feel like people really need to hear that because so many people don't want to buy a vacation rental because they're like, oh, people are going to tear my house up. But they really don't. Most people leave your house fine. Yeah.
And if you understand and you target those demographics, right? Like a lot of people are afraid of kids because they do damage and whatnot. But again, if you make it kid friendly, that like they're not, you're giving them things to do beyond just a really nice looking house, they're not going to do damage. They're going to be playing in the yard. They're going to be, so we have also a big, huge fenced in yard. Nobody else in our neighborhood has a fenced in yard. We made it so that it could be dog friendly if we decided we needed to pivot into dog friendly. I myself have three dogs. I have two dogs. So,
me too.
Yeah. So we also made it our vacation home. So when we take the dogs up, that we can let the dogs operate in our vacation home as well. To date, we haven't needed to go dog friendly. And we're still booked and still making the money without having to do it. On occasion, we'll allow it. Like if it's a big booking for a holiday or something like that during the weekends. You know, we just put up the couch covers and call it a day, you know? I'm trying to remember what the second part of your question was.
I don't remember myself.
Sorry. I tend to talk like circles and then I
No, forget. Love it. The more info our listeners can get, the better.
Yeah. So where I was going is, unfortunately, you're kind of trading off size for ease. Right, or profit for ease in that sense, because you get limited by a single family can only afford so much. The other limits that we're finding is we're very much weekend, right? So we're booked every weekend solidly for the whole year. The weekdays get trickier,
right?
We often don't get like a full week stay. That's been a little odd. I feel like we should be getting more like week-long stays. But we are priced high. Like our ADR is high compared to other people because we now have 58 solid 5-star reviews. We're the only house in the entire area that has all 5-star reviews.
Oh, wow. That's great. Good for y'all.
And one thing I learned with that is twofold. Under promise, over deliver, right?
Right.
So what I said to him, like my husband was, his cousin is like uber wealthy and lives out in California, and his wife like owns a military defense company. Like they're uber wealthy. They had this stunning, gorgeous wedding. They put us up in this gorgeous hotel that had so many defects that your eye is like, for the price this hotel is, that should be cleaner. That should be like, you go in with this perception of value that they overpromised and underdelivered, and we were disappointed.
Oh,
in our property, we don't say we're luxury by any means. We're kind of an economy stay, but our price is really high, right? But what you're getting is a place that feels like home and feels like if you do some damage, it's not that big a deal. All of our furniture is thrifted, all of it. I think to furnish that apartment, I maybe spent $3,000 to furnish the entire house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it, again, comes with this very homey, there's some scratches on the furniture, but they don't care because they're so blown away by the Bigfoot experience that they're overlooking these little hiccups, right? So operationally, when there's hiccups, like let's say the internet goes down, or let's say, you know, the lock didn't work or whatever, they don't even, they completely forget about it because they're so happy with the experience that you're given. Whereas if you're giving them a luxury, whatever, they want everything to be perfect. And there's, they don't, they're less forgiving when things go bad.
Yeah, you really, I feel like even if you do have a crazy expensive property, you kind of can't use the word luxury because it's so subjective.
Right.
Like there are people out there who complain about the Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
And so it just is so different depending on who you are. Same thing with the word turnkey. I found people are buying properties. Like you could buy a fully furnished property that you could turn around and rent right now, like turnkey, but what I consider turnkey and what that person considers turnkey might be two different things. So those are words that I like to stay away from personally.
And depending on your avatar, right? Every property has a different key demographic, right? Yes. And it's very hard to have a property that's going to appease everybody.
Yes.
We are not a party house, and we have people try to rent with, like, we have 10 people and it's like, this is a two bedroom, like, you're not going to be happy in our property. Even if we did rent to you for you to save X amount of money sleeping on the floor.
Right.
You're not going to be happy. 10 people don't fit in this property comfortably.
I totally agree with that. When people try to slam too many people into a small property, they're already going to be like pre-annoyed with your property because they're having to, you know, adults are having to sleep in the same room with each other and listen to each other breathe and sleep on the floor and sleep on a fold-out couch that may be uncomfortable. So I feel like you're, by sleeping too many people and people being crowded and having to wait on bathrooms and showers and things, you're actually setting yourself up for a worse review and probably less money overall than if you do a really good stay for less people.
Exactly. And like, so when we have people reach out and they'll ask, like, you know, it's a group of friends coming to go skiing. And I always write out to them. So also having the family, now having my own family. So I did all this before I had children. Now I have a 1-year-old. So now I'm going in changing some things, right? That like I didn't know about before that now would be like, oh God, I would love to have this when I go traveling. I didn't know before I had kids. But we try to set up the beds to be bigger family friendly. So for instance, we have a king bed in the one room and 2 twin beds in the other room. They're not huge rooms, but we put a toddler bed in with the king. So now we can say we sleep 1 extra person, but the caveat is it's a child, right?
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, we can say we sleep 6 when really adults, we comfortably sleep 4.
Right.
We also have a cot that folds out. But because we primarily rent to kids, an 8-year-old is totally fine sleeping on a cot. Right.
Right.
So now we have people sometimes reach out and say, we have 6 adults. And you respond to them basically saying, you know, it's a toddler bed. Like it's not comfortable for 6 adults. You could sleep on the couch if you're willing to do that. But just an FYI, some people are, right? We had, it's so funny because our 2 biggest best reviews are kids and men. Men love the Bigfoot thing. Like they geek out over this Bigfoot thing for some reason. Because I guess they're children. They're probably the same.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar.
easily entertained. we get pictures of like groups of men like posing in front of the Bigfoot. It's hilarious. There's also a skirmish paintball is nearby, which is like a huge big paintball outdoor arena, I guess. So they have a lot of tournaments. So we get a lot of groups of men stay with us for this paintball tournament. And they love it because they're kids.
Of course.
But one of the biggest like ideas that I want to get across is you always hear like you need, oh, we also don't have professional photos. I know that it goes against your things you promote.
You got to do that like today.
No, we're booked so solidly. It almost adds, it kind of again makes you stand out, right? So like you see these like picture perfect magazine pictures, they're all gray, and then you see one that looks like a normal house. It looks like a photo that somebody took. Now I do digital editing, I you know, make sure the lighting is good, I make it look nice. It's not like, you know, corner photo. I don't know if you have the listing up, but they look nice. The pictures, they're not, you know, crappy, but they're not professionally staged perfect. And honestly, I think that makes us stand out a little bit more from a homie perspective. I also didn't spend any money on them. I took them, did them myself. And then even further, you know, you constantly hear like the only way to be successful and beat competition is to have a hot tub. And have all the operational expenses come with that in a mountain area. We don't have a hot tub. We don't have any special amenities beyond fun Bigfoot games that I made that were free that keep us booked and a solid 5-star rental.
So I want to do an experiment.
Yeah.
I want you to, so you're pretty much booked like 100%, like super high occupancy, right?
Pretty high, yeah.
Okay.
In the high season, we're 100% booked. Okay. In the low season, we're booked at least every weekend. Sometimes we're a little bit more like 85% in off season.
Okay. So that level of occupancy, which is great, tells me that you're not charging enough. And I want to do an experiment. I want to see if you get professional photos, if you're able to get a higher price per night. I just want to see. You can always go back.
Yeah. But I'd be curious. No, I definitely have considered it. The other tricky part with the Poconos, sort of, because it's seasonal, we have 4 seasons. So, you know, your advice is always to update your pictures. So every season I'm changing my pictures to be fall, to be spring, to be summer, to be winter, because there's different things that attract you. So in the summer, it's our huge fenced in outdoor yard with games and a fire pit and grills. But you're not using that in the winter because it's negative 10 degrees. So that's when you show the indoor fireplace, the gas fireplace, the game room that's inside, those sorts of things. So I have to get professional photos for all 4 seasons. So that's one thing just keeping in mind of like why I'm not fully doing it. But yeah, it's definitely something. I need to get aerial photos too, like a drone shot, to show how close to the lake we are. That's something.
Yeah. That would really do it. And yeah, you don't even have to mess up any bookings. You don't have to interfere with any bookings to get some drone photos done.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see as well. But it's one of those things that's like, if one of the things I learned is, again, not necessary to sometimes do an expense if the ROI isn't going to be there. I think pictures probably would help our ROI. The problem with our listing price is, again, you hit that ceiling. You know, over 3 years, I've learned kind of what that ceiling is, where if I'm priced a little too high, we stop getting bookings. Mm-hmm. Because you're only rent. Like, I have Price Labs, so it runs, you know, for higher demand weekends, et cetera. Which, by the way, Price Lab was a game changer. After the first year, we were certainly underpriced. The ratings matter too. People are willing to spend more because, again, we're the only 5-star rated in our radius, in our area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And again, because it's like they come and they get this magical families told us their kids say, when are we going back to the Bigfoot house? Right. So it's again, just that experience that cost me no money that people want to come back year after year after year.
And that's so important too. What we're here to do is to kind of provide the backdrop for people to create memories with their family. And
yeah,
the Bigfoot theme, I think it sounds like you really kind of done a good job of making that happen. And I think that that's a really important takeaway from this episode for our listeners is make sure you know what your target demographic is and stick to that. Because if you're trying to make everything for everyone, then probably not going to be as successful as if you just know who you're going for and make sure that that is a wide enough demographic, that there's enough of that type of tourism coming to your area and just kind of focus on that.
Right. So, and where it can go sometimes too much is, like I said, with, it's not kitschy Bigfoot, right? So if we went really kind of kitschy Bigfoot, then you're kind of like really limiting who's coming, because you're limiting like, oh, I'm a Bigfoot enthusiast, right? So sometimes you see some of these houses that are like, you know, Mario themed, and the whole house is Mario, right? Well, it's like, well, if you're not really into Mario, like, yeah, maybe it's kid friendly, but like, what if the kid likes Bluey, right? So right. Like you're pigeonholing yourself. And what's nice with how we, so and not to give my, all my tips and tricks and ideas away, because nobody's still this in the Poconos. My next idea, if I were to do another Airbnb up there, would be dog friendly, but a property that's made for dogs. So the idea being, and again, nobody steal my idea. This is trademark. Don't do this before I have the ability to do this. But it would be called Rover Stay Over. Oh, that's the other thing. Like kitschy names, right? So Bigfoot's Nook, it rhymes, it's whimsical, it's fun. It's the alliteration, Nook, Foot's Nook, right? That mm-hmm. sticks to people's minds, having a branded name for your property. So it'd be called Rover Stay Over. And the idea is it's a dog sleepover theme. The whole house is dogs, right? So all the furnishing, all the pictures, I have three dogs, right? Dog owners love dog properties. And they treat them well. If you have multiple dogs, you're a good owner, usually. So again, renovating it so it's attracting dog people. That's what other people don't want. That's going to make you stand out. And if you are dog centric, not even dog friendly, you're dog centric, and you have everything a dog owner could need, you're going to be booked solid.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah. And dog people don't care about dog hair, right? So now your operational expenses, you're under offering, over performing. Now you don't have to worry so much about dog hair being there, because somebody who's not a dog owner is probably not going to rent your house. They're not your demographic. So who cares if somebody who doesn't have a dog doesn't rent your house, right?
Yep. Got to focus on your target avatar for sure.
Exactly. So,
Kira, we are coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on. But before we go, we have three questions that we ask every single guest. And first question, what advice would you give 20-year-old Kira if you knew then what you know now?
Oh, God. never say no to opportunity. Biggest thing, you know, you're going to have doors slammed in your face left and right. Of no fault of your own. Millennials, yay. But you know, there's always opportunity out there if you keep your mind open to learning, if you keep your eyes open, and just stay creative, being able to see that opportunity and see what are the possibilities. I wasn't open to an Airbnb, and now I have a very successful Airbnb that I love to operate.
Awesome. What advice would you give a new short-term rental investor who's looking to get started today?
That's so much advice. I think one of the things that kind of burned me, that you don't realize the short term, is the expenses are so high. So sometimes you may see a property that has like really attractive revenue numbers, but unless you're looking at the profit that they're making, you know, like sometimes these six bedroom houses, their operational expenses are astronomical between utilities you have to pay, the cleaners, you know, in a property or what's the word I'm looking for? In a territory like the Poconos, cleaners are expensive. They're very expensive up there because they're limited. So it's a supply and demand issue. So sometimes things look really, really attractive from a revenue standpoint. You need to look at what are the operating expenses before you pull the trigger on something, because one CapEx, one heater that blows could kill you, right? Mortgage rates are high, you know, so it's more than just how much money does it pull in. It's how much money does it take to operate it?
Totally agree with that. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
I'm so boring with this. It's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's everybody says it, like the most cliche. Going from being laid off four times and having that mindset of I need a paycheck in order to survive, that limited me from those opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with that. I still struggle with like, I should go get a job just to have like some consistent, even though I have five very successful properties that I'm making, you know, almost $80,000 a year in profit on just those properties. I still have that like ingrained in me that I need a job with consistent income because real estate fluctuates, right?
Right.
I have two vacancies right now that I'm like kind of struggling to fill in my midterm rentals. They'll get filled. I'll still make the money, but it's like that. So the rich dad, poor dad of breaking out of that idea that you need to rely on somebody else for stability. I've found way more success and way more happiness in relying on my own abilities to make money and support the family.
All great advice. Thank you again so much, Kira, for coming on, sharing your story. And if our listeners want to find you, follow you, find your property and book it, how can they do that?
Yeah. So I'm not really like social media, et cetera. You can find me on Facebook. I'm a millennial. I'm very much like that old lady that's just on Facebook. But yeah, just Facebook. But Airbnb is airbnb.com/h/Bigfoot's Nook. You could probably also, I think, just Google it and then it'll pop up in the Google business page that you can then hop over to Airbnb from there. But we're open to booking. So if anybody wants to stay, bring their family, you know, we can always work out. If you say you saw me on Avery's show, we can work out a discount if you need it. So,
love that.
Yeah. but yeah, so come see us, check out the page, get some ideas, see what we're doing. Like I said, you don't need to spend a ton of money to be successful in this space.
All right. Well, thanks so much again for coming on. And listeners, we'll catch y'all next week.
Awesome. Thanks, Avery.
Thank you.